Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the channel. I tried to get things quiet around here and get the cats settled in for a nap, but they weren't having it. Well, one did. One decided it was bath time right here. Anyway, it took me a few days to get an episode out from the last one. Kind of a slow start, but we're getting there. Don't worry. We're not going to disappear like we did before. There may be a little bit bigger spacing between videos. Thank you. Between videos, but I'm trying to be consistent, not necessarily daily. So let's do some more tech support. Why not? Actually, there's some tech support stuff in here, but it's really a malicious compliance thread. So we'll just call it Tales from Malicious Compliance Tech Support. Sure, why not? Approval for everything? Okay. So I'm in IT, and where I work, my team is awesome. We're usually allowed to our own devices about everything related to the network and equipment related to keeping everything running. Our manager usually just wanted reasons for everything, and if it made sense, it was cleared the same day. Anyways, the present day. Around the beginning of the year, our higher managers decided they're going to keep a tighter leash on spending and such. So they looked into the IT department because we do at times need 6K plus of hardware for replacements, normal wear and tear over the year, and we recently did a 75K network rebuild because of corporate decisions, but we've kept to the assigned budget. In order to keep IT under their thumb, they've switched to requiring submitting approvals before submitting the official purchase order. So the malicious compliance. The notice said essentially if IT needs to order it, we want to approve it first, so everything gets an approval form. IT needs $75 for more post-its? Approval form. Critical stuff for an immediate response? Approval form. Basically, it's gotten to the point where something that took us 1 to 2 weeks for delivery now takes 4 to 5 weeks for the same thing, which has caused strains on everything we usually work on. Parts that need replaced are still on order, so stations and computers are offline until replacements are approved. It's satisfying watching the management scramble to mass approve things once it's brought up as impacting the site's work. I understand you gotta keep an eye on the budget and make sure things kinda stay mostly in line. But if you've got a team that you've been able to trust up to that point, why mess with it? Now, if you've got a team that goes all willy-nilly and, you know, overspends by, you know, thousands per year, 1,000 up to 5,000, depending on the size of your company, I guess, then yeah, you got to tighten things up. So I kind of see both sides of the argument here, but essentially, like I said, if you have a trusted team in place to begin with and they haven't been screwing around, why play with it? I don't know. Well, looks like he's going to settle down in the window for a little bit. See if he stays. You really want me to log time by the ticket? I'm sure all of you reading this have to log their work time in one way or another. And I'm sure most of you don't agree with the granularity, wow, that was a hard one, of said logging. So I work in IT. Many years ago, I was involved in a big project creating a new platform while maintaining the old one. So during the week, I would spend some time on support tickets. My role was more high level. I would never be the one to actually work on a ticket. At one point in time, there was a new support coordinator assigned to the client account. The number of tickets was rising and the team couldn't keep up, threatening the new platform. The coordinator needed metrics on the team's performance, so he generated reports from the ticketing and the time logging systems, combined them, and started looking into improvements, until he came across my logs. The metrics told him I spend about 2 hours a week and edit a varying amount of tickets. This looks weird, and he couldn't bill the client on tickets I worked on, so he asked me what was going on. I explained that I would look over the list of open tickets, bulk update where needed, and log my time with a remark like classified tickets. Then I would move on to my other duties. He didn't like that and told me to enter a log time for each separate ticket I work on. I asked him what the minimum time was that he wanted me to log, which turned out to be 15 minutes. Fast forward a few weeks of me spending an hour a day logging hours, and logging that task too, and creating virtual overtime of about an hour a day. Then the coordinator comes up to me with a request to go through and update the full backlog. I'm fine with that, and I tell him I'm logging that as a generic task and not per ticket. He tells me no, it must be logged per ticket. So finally, the malicious compliance. I spend about 2 hours to go over the backlog and make sure everything's in order. Then I spend the rest of the day entering everything into the time logging system. Fun fact, I was the first to reach the system's limits, but found a workaround to log everything. That day, as logged in the time tracking software, I worked for more than 16 hours. The rest of the week, I took it easy. Came in late, went home early. I was done for the week, and every hour I worked extra would be unpaid, right? When it came time for the invoicing, the coordinator couldn't justify the huge amount of hours I logged on the account. My rate was twice that of tech support. And finally, he allowed me to stop logging by the ticket. My productivity went up again, as did my mood. I did flag the potential problems and drop in productivity to the CTO and CEO, who I reported to directly, but they said to comply anyway. We did laugh about it afterwards and learned a lesson in how not to waste time. Thanks for reading my story. Again, with the micromanaging, I don't understand why people feel the need to know every little nuanced detail. I guess maybe I do, but at the same time, this guy explained to you what was going on. He went to the CTO and CEO directly and explained to them what was going on, and they all wanted to do it anyway, so I don't know. I mean, the good news is they did it for a little while and found out the problem pretty quickly, so yeah, we're able to revert back with little pain, I guess. But let's face it, not everything is direct billable when it comes to this kind of stuff, so I don't know. Beats me. I was denied 2 days of paid PTO, so I took off a whole month. When I worked corrections, I requested for 2 weeks off. I had been there for years and accrued plenty of paid leave. It was given to me as I had done so months in advance for a personal event. The 2 weeks went by, way too quickly. I had specifically lined up my 2 week break to lead into my 2 days off at the beginning of the break and at the end so I could maximize my time off. However, during my normal off days, a family emergency came up that was quite serious. So I asked for another 2 days off to handle my situation. I was told by my direct supervisor that there was no way she was approving that. Because we're only allowed to use 84 hours of leave in one continuous block. Given our rotating written schedules and 12-hour shifts, this equaled 2 weeks. And she ordered me to come in the next day, or I would receive a write-up. I didn't argue because I knew she was correct, so I showed up that night and reported for my shift, and much to my surprise, my captain had called out sick. So a relief captain came in to fill her shift. I asked him to give me the next day off after my shift was over. He and I had a rapport, given the number of years we've worked with each other previously, and so he looked at the schedule and my leave. He said, "You know you've got plenty of leave, right?" "Yeah, I know, I just need some of it to handle my business tomorrow." "No, I mean, you've got plenty of leave to take, and the roster is filled the next 2 weeks." "Yeah, I just got off a 2 week vacate." I stopped because he winked at me, and it finally clicked. We can only take up to 2 weeks off consecutively. Nothing says we can't take off 2 weeks, come in for, say, an hour, then go home and take off another 2 weeks. So I did, and he signed the paperwork stating it's not my shift. F that bitch. I handled my emergency literally the next day. It turned out to not be as serious as we thought, and then enjoyed another paid 2 weeks off from work. It was great. To add to the bliss, I reported back from work to find out that this captain was fired and replaced for some kind of negligence or something. It was a great month. Edit. The captain I worked for was fired. The captain everyone liked, who gave me the PTO, stayed for a couple more years before retiring. See, this is why you get things like this. When people take advantage of the system and the loopholes, you can't blame them. Honestly, this guy was probably one of the more forthright and honest people you had. He was only going to take what he needed, what he thought he needed to handle his emergency, and it just happened to bump up on his 2 week vacation. But, you know, you backed him into a corner, the other captain found the loophole. Here you are, now he's taking another full 2 weeks off. You know, if it screwed things up, it's kind of on you. There's always a little bit of wiggle room that can be had to give somebody that extra day or two to handle, you know, emergencies, funerals, bereavement, whatever. And, just don't be a bee. The city wanted us to get rid of native grass, so we built an urban wetland. It all goes back to the summer of 2021. I started working as a biologist at an urban farm, planning and constructing polyculture systems to research food production. I developed a plan for noxious weed control and started to construct the system over the course of 2 years. During this time, we had some back and forth with the city council, who didn't understand the nature of our agriculturally zoned property. After several meetings and lots of work over 2 years, we'd finally made a lot of progress and reached an agreement with the city by the summer of 2023. Part of the agreement was to mow ditches and the small yard of our property's farmhouse. I'll remind you, the property is zoned as agricultural, so we had no obligation to follow residential ordinances. About halfway through the summer, at the end of July, the city came onto our property and mowed the entire native pasture and what was soon to be an orchard of already planted baby trees. Oh, man. When we talked to them, they noted ordinances against tall grass and state noxious weed laws as a justification, the latter of which is ironic because they interrupted our system of invasive plant control by mowing in a time when we should have been spraying bioherbicide. So now, in order to remove all the invasive plants from my property and comply with all the ordinances, none of which have anything to do with water, I've created a massive urban wetlands. It's huge, it's beautiful, it's wet. It's compliant to every law and ordinance. It's mine, and the city mayor who lives next door to my farm can enjoy it just as much as I enjoy it living 5 miles away. So now I have a wetlands to research instead of a prairie, and I love it. It always amazes me that so many city, county, and local municipalities and governments tend to not even know or understand their own zoning laws. You get people on city and county councils who think they just rule the world and that they know everything. And half the time, they don't even read bills. They don't read ordinances. It's just amazing. They just like to be a bunch of busybodies. And then you have people who are in charge of, making sure people don't have their grass too tall or their houses are messed up and peeling paint and whatever. A little bit of power goes to their head and they just totally go nuts. Enforcing the rules is one thing, but when you start going onto somebody else's property after agreements have been made and start cutting people's things down, then especially in an agricultural zone, you have messed up. Nickel, what are you doing? He's lurking around back there doing something. Dealership pulled bait and switch. It cost them over $50,000. The city I live in has extremely inflated vehicle values compared to the surrounding areas. If you buy the same car from a neighboring state, you can often save $3,000 to $4,000 without really trying. When I buy a new vehicle, which happens every 3 to 4 years, I always look in the surrounding states to compare pricing. This story happened about 5 years ago, and the malicious compliance is still ongoing to this day. I was shopping for a new car, brand new, and found one that matched my specs about 12 hours away in a neighboring state. It was priced about $5,000 below comps. After looking up flights, there was a one-way direct flight that took me to their local airport for around $175, plus the gas to drive back. I was looking at a total of maybe $275 to save $5,000. Absolutely worth it in this situation. I reached out to the dealership, negotiated a bit, and agreed on a price. I let them know that I would be flying in to pick up the car and offered to pay in full in advance of the flight. They told me that all they needed was a $1,000 deposit and that the car was considered mine. We signed a contract and I paid the deposit. And then I booked the flight for 3 days after that. First sign of things going awry. When I showed up at the airport, the dealership was supposed to pick me up. This had been arranged in advance. A quick phone call later and I grabbed an Uber to take me the 20 miles to the dealership with the promise of them covering that cost. No big deal either way. Second sign of things going awry. When I showed up at the dealership, the salesman I had been speaking with asked me if I wanted to walk the lot with him to look at a few cars. Yes, cars, plural. Questioning what he meant by that, we walked into the lot to see these cars that he was talking about. Were these some special type of gold inlaid, full self-driving, full self-flying amazemobiles? No, they were not. When I point blank asked to see the car that I was buying, the one with the VIN XYZ listed in this signed contract with a deposit on it, I was told it was no longer available. The salesman offered to show me similar cars, which would have been fine were we able to come to similar terms on pricing, but all of these cars were outrageously priced. Think $2,000 over MSRP instead of $5,000 under MSRP. Important note for later, there was never a mention, or any paperwork, signage, etc., of any incentives for giving 5-star reviews. Fast forward 2 to 3 hours. I am now convinced this dealership never had this specific car on the lot, and that this was 100% a bait and switch gone wrong. The dealership was unwilling to sell me a similar vehicle at a similar price to our negotiated one. We were over $5,000 apart, and were unwilling to pay the flight cost for this bait and switch scenario. A heated discussion ensued between myself and the GM, where he told me to go ahead and leave a bad review, but that I wasn't getting any free money from him. I took an Uber to a nearby hotel and booked a flight back home for the next day. Total cost around $750. Now cue the malicious compliance. This dealership had an average Google rating of right around 4.5 stars and around 400 total reviews. Pretty solid for a dealership. That night, while I was sitting in the hotel room, I had some time to burn. I spent a couple hours creating new email accounts just so that I could leave multiple reviews for this dealership. All said and done, I left around 20 one-star reviews over the course of that night, and then sort of stopped caring about the reviews. At this point, my focus shifted to recovering my lost travel expenses. A few days after getting back, I sent the dealership a demand letter for $750, which they promptly ignored. Since we had done the original contract with the deposit in both states, I was allowed to file a small claim suit in my state, which I did. The dealership never showed up to court, and I received a default judgment for $750. I did collect that, by the way. It took a few certified letters, a few phone calls, and about a year, but I did get a check for $750. As you can imagine, I was still not a happy camper. What they had done was wrong on so many levels. All of my friends knew the story of how I was bait and switched, and the fact that I flew to the dealership on a one-way ticket only made it that much worse. They had all left a bad review or two, but nothing more than a normal mad customer. Cumulative compliance, the long term. I don't know how it started or how it ended up lasting as long as it has, but at some point I had some time on my hands and left a bad review for this dealership. Just one, not two, not three, one. In doing so, I noticed that all the reviews I had left right after leaving the dealership were gone, probably taken down for being fake or because I had left so many at the same time and the dealership reported them. I wanted to make sure this dealership wouldn't do this to someone else, so the next day I checked to make sure that one bad review I had just left was still there. It was, and since I was thinking about it, I went ahead and created another account and left another one-star review. Fast forward 2 to 3 years. It has now become a habit. Every time I have a few minutes to spare, I create a new account and leave a one-star review for this dealership. Their current rating? 1.9 stars with nearly 3,500 total reviews. I'm personally responsible for at least half of those reviews. When you open the dealer's website, one of the large banners that flashes across the screen advertises $50 for a 5-star review. Something about showing that review to your salesman to get a $50 Visa gift card. It's been this way since about a year after that bait and switch occurred, right around the time the 1-star reviews began to accumulate. Assuming I'm responsible for half of their reviews and the fact that the dealership only has 3,500 total reviews, they've paid $50 per review for at least 1,000 reviews, likely more than that. Meaning they have implemented a policy to pay for reviews, have spent $50,000 doing so, and have still seen their average rating drop consistently since telling me to go ahead and leave a bad review. I don't know. I got a thing in me about, you know, leaving fake bad reviews. If I'm wronged and I leave a bad review under my name, my account, cool. Having friends leave reviews and things like that, like review bombing somebody when you didn't actually do business with them, just on the hearsay of somebody else, it just doesn't sit well with me. I'm not saying you shouldn't be happy. I'm not saying you shouldn't go after them for their travel expenses and everything else, for your travel expenses and your hotel and all that. And honestly, you probably could have gone after them for more since it was a total breach of contract. But, you know, I don't know. The whole review thing gets to me. I see people leave, you know, written reviews on their Facebook walls. And then next thing you know, 50 of their closest Facebook friends will leave bad reviews on that restaurant website or whatever, even though they've never been there. And I think something's wrong with that. Sometimes a personal experience is not quite as bad as it really was in reality. When we're unhappy, we do tend to embellish things and make things seem worse than they actually were. And I try not to air my dirty laundry on Facebook because I don't want people doing that. I'm not trying to put somebody out of business. I mean, a car dealership obviously didn't go out of business, but I've seen small restaurants pretty much go out of business because people did this based on nothing more than somebody else's hearsay. So, I don't know. That's just not the way I would approach it. But hey, they did kind of ask for it. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed today's stories. You know, do all the things down below, like, thumbs up, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Leave a comment. And we'll see you on the next one.